We're very pleased to have you here with us. I'm just going to start out the meeting to get a point, and then I'm going to turn it over to my colleague and your legislator to my left, Representative Terry Morrow. But first, before we start, we always like to start out by introducing ourselves. We've got a little ring to it. Is this moderating out there? Okay. By introducing ourselves, and I am Ginny Dragon. I feel like I'm kind of home because I went to the state of office for my BA, and I now represent Roseville, Lauderdale, and St. Anthony Village, which are just north of St. Paul. I'm 10 minutes from the Capitol. And I feel like I should be doing other introductions, but I'm using those for Representative Morrow, for other former legislators in the audience. But if you could go down this way, and then turn back this way.
Well, I'm Terry Morrow, and I represent a district not far from here.
I'm Robin Brown, and I represent the elderly area of District 27A.
I'm Kathy Reiner, and I represent the Mankato area, and I'm just pleased it's a punch to be here with my former colleagues sitting on the office, in the audience.
I'm Representative Tim Faustin from Mora, which is about as far north of the metro as we are south now.
I'm Representative William Mingus, and I represent 58B, which is downtown Minneapolis on the north side.
I'm Tim Strong with House Research. I'm a staff person. I'm Gary Crowell. I'm also a staff person for the House and the Fiscal Analysis Department.
I'm Will Morton. I represent a good portion of Burnsville and Small Heart Savage in the South Metro, South Minneapolis.
I'm Jim Gabney. I represent part of South Minneapolis and the District House.
Good evening. I'm Denise Dietrich, and I represent District 47A, which is suburbs in the northern part of the city. And the only reason I came to them is because I thought I would come myself.
But it didn't get any warmer.
No, it did not get any warmer.
Well, just briefly, the format for tonight is we're going to start out with a short presentation from our very fine fiscal staff person, Tim Strom. We always like to have nonpartisan information to begin the meeting so we all kind of have an understanding. And we're going to specifically focus on the St. Peter area since that's where we are and that's what we'll be hearing about from you. And then afterwards, we would like to hear from you. We're going to be working off the list and we signed it when you came in the door. And once we get through that list, if there's time, then we'll open it up to everybody. And then as far as we can before we adjourn at 8:30. This is a regular House of Representatives meeting, so it is being taped as we need to do to follow our open meeting laws because it is a public meeting. And we would like everybody to try to save, if you can, 3 minutes or less, just so we can hear from as many people as possible. And now I'm going to turn the meeting over to Representative Terry Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Riley, and I'd like to welcome everyone as well, and also to thank Paul Peterson for the members of the committee. Paul Peterson, in the back, the principal here was recognized as secondary school principal of the year, and sitting next to him is Superintendent Jeff Olson, and last year Jeff was recognized as Superintendent of the Year. So we're very thankful to both of them and their staff for congratulating. I'd like to take the opportunity to welcome former and returning school board members from St. Peter, first recognizing Keith Wetter, who just finished another stint on the St. Peter School Board. And we have Peter Nelson and Cheryl Michelle in the back, also St. Peter School Board members. We have Mankato School Board members here as well, and folks from other districts, and I thank all of you for coming. It's wonderful to see you all here tonight. As Representative Riley and I spoke about this a little bit, our hope was to talk about the state of Minnesota education and finance. And particularly proud to be from this area with the Minnesota School Board Association headquarters located in St. Peter with recognized leadership in K-12 education. I think we're going to hear some ideas about where the state might move in the future in order to improve the schools even more for all the students. So thank you very much. We'd also like to recognize two former representatives. We have them sitting together near the back, Representative Ruth Johnson, who I had the pleasure of having as a mentor, and Representative John Gore. I'd like to thank both of you. As Representative Browning mentioned, we've asked the House research staff to provide an overview of how the most recent K-12 education finance bill allocated funding for schools and share some specific information about St. Peter and other area school districts. So this time, I'll turn to Mr. Strum.
Thank you, Chair Morrow. Greg Crow and I are here today to just spend a couple of minutes talking to you about school finance. We're just going to go through a few quick charts with you, and then we've got some individual printouts for each of the area districts that are also on college paper that should have been available by the door, and each of the members have them in their packet. We're happy to answer questions about those for individual school districts or after the meeting if folks want to talk about that. That's fine as well. But we just wanted to make a couple of points about the way the funding session turned out last year with the legislature. As most of you know, the legislature generally budgets on a two-year basis. So last year they set the budget for the current school year and next school year as well. In terms of the overall amount of funding for K-12 education, the amount the legislature appropriated of new money was just under $800 million. And there's a pie chart in your packets on the first page of the packet that shows how that new money was spent. And you can see that that's radically different from what it was the last few years, and that almost half of that money, 46% of the new funds, were designated for special education. And I think that's made a big difference in school budgets for two reasons. First, many districts were experiencing dramatic shortfalls in their special education funding, and this is helping fill that gap a bit. But secondly, because so much of the new money was devoted to special education, only about 40% in total was devoted to the regular general education program, and that results in numbers that you commonly hear, the 2% available for schools this year and the additional 1% on the formula next year. So those two numbers, the 2% and the 1%, reflect the formula amount, and that was essentially a result of the legislature choosing to allocate almost half of the new money in education for special education. And if you turn the page on those charts, you'll see some of the reasons why the education committee made those decisions. The first of those charts shows what's happened to state special education aid over time. And you can see that from 2002 forward, there was very little change. In fact, in 2004, the special education funding was essentially frozen, and for 4 years it stayed at the same level. For 2008, as you look on this chart, the top line, the line with the boxes on it, reflects what the legislative action did. And you can see the legislature put well over $100 million in special education the first year, and another almost $50 million in the second year on top of that. So the net result is a lot of the new money, a lot of that $800 million that the legislature spent went into special education funding. The results, good for special education funding. However, for most districts, they're telling you that the 2% and the 1% on the formula aren't where they would like those to be. If you turn to the last page, you'll see that one of the ways that we measure special education funding is how it compares to the expenditures that districts have. This is often referred to as the special education cost subsidy. And you'll see from 2002 to 2007, that cost subsidy grew at a pretty substantial amount, from more than $300 million to about $530 million. And for fiscal year 2008, it drops pretty dramatically with the new special education money. But you can see, even with the additional special education money in 2009, that subsidy starts growing again. And another way to think about it, that is to think about the percent of the formula that's actually being funded. For 2008, the regular formula funds about 89% of the total. That'll stay at about 87% in 2009, drop just a little bit in 2010 and 2011. So even though the legislature devoted a great deal of its new money to special education funding, there's still going to be pressures on school district budgets regarding special education. So in summary, Mr. Chair, about $800 million of new money. The general education money on the formula was at 2% and 1%, and nearly half of the money went for special education funding.
Great. Thank you very much. Do any of the committee members have any questions for Mr. Strong? And you said up there, you said that the materials are also up front on individual districts?
Mr. Chair, that's right. There's different colored pages, one for each of the neighboring districts of St. Peter. There's a two-page report that shows by category of revenue for each school district how much the additional funding was, both on a total basis and on a per pupil basis.
Again, any questions from any committee members? Well, if not, we'll turn, before we take comments, I'd like to remind everyone, we want to make sure that we get to hear from as many people as possible tonight. If you're interested in speaking, please keep that in mind, about 3 minutes or so. Please state your name before you begin to speak. Again, as Chair Garland mentioned, this is on the record this evening, and we want to make sure that names are picked up on the tape. We encourage you to let you, anyone here tonight, let us know what you have in mind, what you'd like to share with us, and show us how it's done. We'll first invite Superintendent Jeff Olson.
Madam Chairperson, members of the committee, my name is Jeffrey Olson, and I have the privilege of serving as the superintendent of St. Peter Public Schools. First of all, welcome to St. Peter. We're really happy that you made the trip down here and over here, and Terry, the two blocks you made as well. I'd also like to thank you, Representative Morrow, for organizing this hearing and giving us an opportunity to voice our concerns to you about the state of education in Minnesota. Second, I'd like to thank all of you, especially Representative Morrow, Representative Reiner, and State Senator Sharon, for all of your hard work and actions that you've done to support our district this past year. The 2007 legislative action that provided us new funding in the formula, and then addressed issues like special education, the special education cross-subsidy, funds for all-day kindergarten, and early childhood education was greatly needed and much appreciated. Third, I'd like to make three basic comments or requests concerning your work during the upcoming session and in future sessions. Number one, I think it's important that the state of Minnesota provides regular and predictable funding for our schools. For us, waiting to see what the legislature will do during a session or going back to the voters for more money every 2 years just doesn't work. We need some additional funding formula. 1% would be greatly appreciated. And I know you hear that all the time, but I gotta say it anyway. Part of the state. Number two, if the property tax reliance continues, increase the equalization factor to level the playing field for low property wealth districts like St. Peter. To give you an example, in 1995, St. Peter received 73% aid on their operating levy, or 73 cents on every dollar. In 2008, the state aid on our operating levy will be 32%, 32 cents on the dollar. The equalization formula, as I know you're aware, hasn't changed since 1992. Number three, new mandates cost us time and money and should be avoided unless those mandates are fully funded or targeted. Efforts that you've taken in areas like response to intervention and special education, I think, are on target. And other efforts that are designed to improve our quality of our educational force, our teaching and administrators are also greatly appreciated. I know that you took some action that didn't quite make it to get some help for National Board Teacher Certification. In St. Peter, we think that's a great program. We have 5 National Board Certified teachers, at least one of whom, Holly Strive, is in the audience tonight. And that's a great accomplishment, and it's a great program. It's highly rigorous and improves the quality of teaching at our schools. Second, I think that local districts will do the right thing. I think in our district, we've certainly taken attention to working hard for professional learning communities. Our teachers are doing a great job of doing all they can to use data to inform and improve instruction. But we're working under a lot of mandates that are causing us angst and worry and anxiety. For example, in 1995, we gave 2 mandated state tests, a basic skills test in reading and a basic skills test in mathematics. This spring, we will administer 18 tests, and that obviously takes time away from education and time away from students. Again, in St. Peter, I believe we have our teaching staff and administrators, especially our principals, working very hard for our students in those areas that I've mentioned. and simply put, our place is full. Finally, I do want to thank you for coming to St. Peter and taking the time to listen to our concerns, and good luck at this session. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Superintendent Wilson. We also have some testifiers from the St. Peter Student Council who would like to invite us. We're trying to get them home in time to do their homework. So we're going to jump the queue. Will you please introduce yourself?
Good evening, everybody. My name is Jeff Walter. I'm the student council president.
I'm Anna Blund, and I'm student council representative to our school board.
My name is Alicia Woods. I'm a sophomore here at Payson, and I'm also on the
All right, just to give you a little gist of what's going on here. Earlier this year at the fall student council division meeting, Dr. Morrow spoke for us. That was a great privilege for us. And he gave us a challenge. He gave us three questions that he wanted us to answer so we could give our input, and now we have an opportunity to express our opinion. The first of which was, what should be taught? What is important to state education in Minnesota? What we came up with is, now this is going to sound kind of cheesy, but this is what we came up with, to provide an optimal learning environment for students of all abilities. Just to last a little bit. And just to, like I said, to elaborate on that a little bit, is one thing that we really wanted to stress is that material that's up to date in the classrooms. A lot of today's problems, such as global warming, world conflict, that kind of thing, is not stressed in classrooms. That is one thing that we think should be improved. Another is for teachers to be able to apply those issues that are being taught to life outside of school. A lot of times it's just sitting in a book, doing a problem, and then moving on to the next problem. They don't really apply it outside of school. Students really appreciate that when it is applied outside. And then also, this is going to kind of step on to Anna's topic, but the second question is that teachers be able to kind of relate to the students to get the material that they want to have pushed across to the students' knowledge. All right, I think we'll move on to the second question.
Okay. The second question that we were asked was, how can the state improve public education? And we came up with three different improvements, right, on the student committee. The first of those improvements was to make sure that all the teachers were qualified to teach their subjects. And that sounds okay, but we understand you can't quantify everything. You can't give a test to find out if the teacher can relate to their students or whether they can apply the material. But there are certain levels that you can quantify. We, as students, certainly take enough standardized tests, so perhaps there's some way to make sure that the teachers are also kept up to date in the subject that they are teaching. Our second improvement would be to just ensure that education addresses all the needs of all the students, because a lot of times you find that the lower end of the spectrum is addressed and the more gifted students are addressed, but sometimes the kids in the middle seem to fall through the cracks, and that is something that could be improved. And this sort of goes with our next, was the AP classes in general. We on occasion in our school, there are certain classes that are labeled AP that do not prepare you to take those AP tests. And we understand that having a small school as we do, it's impossible to provide that wide range of challenge to all students. So we often have a regular class and then an AP class, and that AP class is often not geared towards those tests. So whether it's renaming it as advanced or ensuring that it really does prepare every student in that class to take that test, that was another thing that we had made a handle with. So,
all right, our third question that Dr. Morrow gave us was, where should the money come from to fund public education? This was one of the more difficult questions for us to come up with an answer. though the financial aspect of education is somewhat out of our league and out of our hands, we do recognize that the gap between the resources of the metro area schools and that of the smaller schools like St. Peter and what is considered outstate Minnesota, we do realize that there is a large gap there. And we realize that the property taxes from the metro area do provide a lot of the funding for the schools, but we were wondering if perhaps there is a different way or a different formula that can equally distribute the funds across the state.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you so much. Well done.
Thank you,
Mayor. Thank you. I will turn to Steve Sheldren, and I'll let you know, Bob Meeks, you're batting next. Mr. Sheldren.
Good evening, committee members. I've got a handout. Can I bring that up to you and refer to it as you please? Again, good evening, representatives, committee members, and thank you, Representative Moran, for inviting me to speak to you. I have written down here that I was going to offer extra credit points to you for traveling out in single-digit temperatures, but you get double extra credit points because we're below zero, so that is great. My name is Steve Sheldrick. I'm a lifelong resident of Minnesota, father of three past and current St. Peter School students, a charter member of the St. Peter Action for Healthy Kids Committee, and director of Guiding Service at Castillo's Health College. The Child Nutrition Act of 2004, U.S. Congress established a new requirement that all school districts with federally funded school meal prepared programs develop and implement wellness policies that address nutrition and physical activity, and that was begun by the start of the 2006-2007 school year. This was in response to alarming data that obesity rates in children have doubled and tripled in adolescents in the last two decades. The predominant cause was physical inactivity, unhealthy eating habits, and excessive calorie intake. It was reported that for the first time in modern history, the life expectancy of children would not exceed that of their parents. School districts across the state scrambled to assemble wellness committees of various names. Ours in St. Peter was the Action for Healthy Kids Committee. And I appear before you to speak of the success that we've realized in a relatively short period of time in assessing current states and recommending areas of focus and consideration. While committees were challenged to consider both areas of nutrition and physical education, I speak with regard to just the nutrition side. St. Peter schools and other districts have greatly reduced or eliminated high sugar, non-juice-based drinks at meals and during the school day. They've identified and eliminated menu items containing 35% or greater calories from fat, 35% or greater weight from added sugar, and they have reduced sodium content in areas specific to snacks, main entrees, and side orders. Wellness committees have made recommendations about types of appropriate in-class snacks, menu offerings and school-sponsored concession stands, and they have encouraged groups wishing to raise money to support programs to steer away from things like candy sales during the fundraising activities. With regard to the congressional mandate, I'm pleased to report that indications from national and state media, from trade magazines and journals, and from our own Action for Healthy Kids Committee, that our children are being offered food items in our schools that contain less fat, less sugar, and less sodium than have been offered in recent years. And that's a good thing. I believe I represent professionals in the food industry, parents of school-aged children, and certainly the Action for Healthy Kids Committee when I say that the federal mandate of compliance by elimination has been effective. I believe and also represent that is just half of the solution to encourage and promote healthy eating practices of our children. I would argue that taking out the bad must be accompanied by bringing in the good. It is the reason why a celebrity chef from the UK by the name of Jamie Oliver, the Naked Chef,
has developed and lobbied for funds to implement a school lunch program called Feed Me Better. It's the reason that closer to home, a chef by the name of Seth Bixby Doherty, ranked one of the nation's top 10 best new chefs in 2005, left his high-profile chef duties in Minneapolis and founded the nonprofit Real Life or Real Foods Initiative with a mission to improve what school children eat in the lunchroom. Unfortunately, it's also the reason that a great percentage of our high school students who enjoy an open lunch period leave campus, and they leave for fast food sites, gas station, convenience stores, and the like. The research has already been done, and that's in front of you. When I hand out this executive summary of some work that was done years ago, 2001, as a matter of fact, by the Department of Children, Families, and Learning, titled Focus on the Future, What Being at School Should Look Like, a Student Perspective. It's a fantastic sampling of ideas and recommendations from the consumers, our students. I'll not delve into those specifics, I'll let you peruse at your leisure, but I will testify that the comments and ideas stated there are the exact same comments and ideas that our St. Peter High School representatives of the Action for Healthy Kids Committee have been suggesting for the past 3 years. In order to implement those, comply via supplementation, in addition to complying via elimination, funding is necessary. Additional resources are needed for personnel, personnel training, facilities modification, equipment procurement, and equipment upgrades. And last but not least, food and grocery budgets. Federal funds and subsidies alone will not allow the types of programmatic upgrades necessary to keep our students in our schools for lunch and to increase satisfaction levels of our student diners. My reason for presenting tonight is to give notice to our state legislators that requests for capital improvements and program enhancements will be coming your way. Just because the bad has been eliminated doesn't mean the good has been accomplished. Funding must be made available to those who seek to improve school food programs, funding clear, purposeful, measurable, and helpful goals, focusing on the future, funding what being at schools should look like. Please know that when the requests come in, the need is real. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, and I should note that Representative Benson, who couldn't join us this evening, had a bill in 2007 that did increase school lunch money, which is part of the goal that Mr. Shelton is talking about. Mr. Meeks and Mr. Sutterman, you're on deck.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity. I'm Bob Meeks, I'm staff of the School Board Association. I've had many years working with you and your predecessors, and welcome you to St. Peter, not only as I'm sure mentioned, is this the home of the state's office, but it's also the home of the MSBA. It's the home of Scholarship National, Office of Scholarship America. We have a number of private schools in St. Peter and an excellent public school system. We're joined with our neighbors, the Mankato's, the New Orleans, the Nicollet's, the Cleveland's, the Lesure, and many others that put a high value on education. And by the way, it's much easier to testify here than it is in room 112 of the state capitol, where a number of you have been there, and looking at when Senator Larry Pogamiller was now Majority Leader, Pogamiller was the chair of K-12 Finance, and now Leroy Stump is a larger-than-life portrait of a man named Joe Rolette that I have to look at every morning after leaving here at 5:30 in the morning and getting there testifying at 8, and I know you all know your history, but Joe Rolette has stopped St. Peter from being the state capital. Sometimes I want to thank him, I think. The better side, and I don't want to dwell because Kirk Schneider, who's with me tonight, and Greg Schwab, meet with you daily during the session. So let me just make some general comments, and I don't think it'll surprise you to know that they're going to reflect back in November when we had 99 referendums being held in the state. We were very proud of those 67 districts that were able to pass a referendum, but we have a great deal of concern about the 32 we failed. We have excellent districts such as Robbinsville, Brainerd, Lamidi, St. Louis County, and the other 28 that are contained, where they've got some very difficult decisions they're going to be making over the next couple of months getting ready for the next school year. We're going to see programs gutted, we're going to see class sizes increase, and we're going to see major problems trying to make the system work. Now, I understand the state had a budget problem, but your problem didn't diminish our needs. We still have the same needs we had going into the November elections. And no one likes to have referendums, but that's become the way we have to go. As a person who testified against what was then called the big plan, and spent a lot of time with other people like Dwayne Benson and Nesbitt and some others in relation to Governor Ventura's big plan, the state has not kept its promise. And Madam Chair, this chairman, I know you both have made that statement more than once, and it's true. And that was a concern we had. We have an excellent, high-quality teaching staff. We have excellent, high-quality faculty, paraprofessionals, custodians, bus drivers, and others. We're willing to work with these. We can look at all-day kindergarten. We need to look at preschool opportunities increased. We need to look at a K-12 system where every student is challenged. We need to look at a post-secondary system where not only the academics but the technical side is stressed, and that all Minnesota students have the opportunity for a high-quality and affordable post-secondary opportunity. So, Ms. Chairman, thank you for your service on the school board prior to joining the legislature. We want to make sure you stay with us as you have been, and Kathy, thank you. And all of you, thank you for your service, and we'll look forward to working with you when we go through the 2008 session. Thank you.
Thank you. Wilson, it was pretty quickly allow you to introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mark Wilson from the Big Lake Becker County, welcome to the Twin Cities. Good to be here. Thanks for coming out and apologize for my delay.
Thank you. And we do have a school board member from the sewer, John Chamberlain, with us this evening. And Mr. Chamberlain, if you could introduce the members of the Mankato School Board who are with you tonight.
Yes.
We have actually seven people that are here from the Mankato School District that are on the legislative committee, four of which are school board members that are chaired with the board. Ann Hendricks, there. Sam, there is your name. Okay. Judy Brandon, Tom Rexstein, Tom Claver, the administrator, and Cindy Claymore. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Dave Fernerman, I serve as treasurer of the Mankato School Board. We've distributed our legislative platform. I think you've all received a copy. I have a couple extras in case you did not see one. And we're very proud of our legislative committee. We've had this in existence for over 20 years. We've already met three times this year. We take these issues very seriously. Our committee is made up of parents, students, community members, school board members, and administrative staff, of which 14 of the 22 members are from the community. So we go through a process where we prioritize our agenda, and on page two, we come up with six of our top items for this legislative session. And back on page 12, we have additional items, but we'd like to cover the six that we have today. And the first two that I'd like to talk to is number two and number six. And number two is funding adequacy and school finance reform. And Jeff mentioned that earlier. The PS Minnesota, I know you formed a task force committee. We're looking at that and trying to kind of go off of that and work through that. And we appreciate that. We have concerns, as Bob also mentioned, that number of school districts within our state, 99 of them, actually almost 100 because one was earlier in the year, or is slated for February, to act on operating referendums to help cover the day-to-day operations of the schools. So that's an important issue to us, as well as the property tax relief and equalization factors in the formula that are outlined. At this time, I'd like to call on Cindy Klingel to discuss the next two issues.
Good evening.
I will be referring specifically to three of the items in making a reasonable school legislative platform. I'll be addressing full day kindergarten, early childhood funding, and No Child Left Behind. I'm just going to briefly give a little bit of background on full day kindergarten and actually early childhood at the same time. To give you an example of why in Mankato we think both initiatives are critical for additional funding is data that we receive from our incoming kindergartners. Last year, and then again, same results this year, we give each year a national norm standardized test based on research out of the Oregon, University of Oregon Center for Reading and Research. It is a test, it's an assessment that's backed by research, and you give it multiple times during the year to identify where a child is at a literacy benchmark. We've heard percentages for the last few years that in Minnesota, approximately 50% of our incoming kindergartners are not ready to learn or are not at the point we need them to be successful. In Mankato last year, on the DIBELS assessment out of the University of Oregon, 51% of our kindergartners did not meet the incoming kindergarten benchmark. Now that's not the outgoing kindergarten benchmark for which we can target those who need to grow the most. This is the incoming benchmark. In Mankato, we have 7,000 students who are now at approximately 600 in each kindergarten class. That's 300 students in Mankato. Children who are not ready or at the point they needed to be successful walking into kindergarten. In Mankato, we have just under 30% pre-reduced lunch families qualifying. That's far less than the 50% of the children not meeting the benchmark. The need for early childhood funding, the need for full day funding, goes far beyond those that we typically consider to be in that very at-risk group of children. We do have detail in our legislative platform and our proposal for at the very minimum what would be helpful, because we know the situation that you're in, the state is in, the funding. Last, I'll refer to No Child Left Behind. I'll preface that by saying that we believe very strongly this needs more than a simple tweaking, but needs to have a major overhaul. We also recognize the limited impact you can have on this legislation being that it's at the federal level. You do, however, have some significant opportunities to impact how Minnesota implements the pieces of No Child Left Behind. And I'm not going to go through them in detail again. You have them in your packet on page, starting on page 10. But what we want to point out in general is that we need you to look at ways that the state can be implementing the provisions of No Child Left Behind in a manner that not only has reasonable accountability, but is paired with support for success, rather than accountability that is paired with punishment and sanction. In order to truly have an impact, and you've heard several people testifying before me, who have all addressed the need for all students, we're finding fewer and fewer of the all are having the opportunities to succeed that we who grew up in Minnesota had 20, 30 years ago. In order for us to be successful as a state, in order for us to be successful as a community, in order for us to be successful as a school district, we need the support from the legislature and the state when it comes to helping all children be successful, especially under the provisions of No Child Left Behind. Thank you.
Next will be John Schaefer, and John is here coming up, and Dave Johnson's on deck. I'll just note that Robin Brown had an all-day kindergarten bill. There were several versions of the bill, but Robin Schaefer was moving all-day kindergarten. And the new store, ECSB, has start funding. There's certainly more to be done. That was one of the priorities under Representative Briley's committee. And finally, I should recognize Representative Briner for work with the Office of Educational Accountability, revising, improving the school report card and other measures. They may want to get a chance to talk with any of these folks after the meeting. Sorry, John.
Madam Chairperson, Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you for meeting with us this evening. I'm John Claiborne, Director of Special Education, School Issues for Mankato Area Public Schools. I also send greetings to Matt Walton, our superintendent of schools, and I will be with us this evening. And this is exactly the sort of forum he'd love to be able to, you know, seem to enjoy this sort of thing. I'll be speaking to the upfront the special education issues and also English language learner concerns. The 2007 voice legislation made great progress toward adequately funding special education programs for which we are grateful. The state's appropriation for special education aid for the 2000 and 2001 year was not sufficient to fully fund the calculated aid formula, and the problem worsened each year, as was identified earlier. By 2006-07, the appropriation was only 79% of the amount needed to fully fund the regular special education aid formula, and only 50% of the amount needed to fund excess counseling. The 2007 legislature substantially increased the special education aid appropriation to recognize 7 years of inflation and come closer to the amount needed to fully fund the formula. In addition, the 2007 legislature converted the special education aid formula from a reimbursement formula for expenses incurred in the second previous year to a formula that funds current expenditures. It seems like it makes a good bit of sense to you. Still, the appropriation for 2007-08 is only expected to fund 89% of the amount needed to fully fund the regular special education percentages specified in statute, and the appropriation for 2009 is only expected to fund 88%. The excess cost aid appropriation shortfall is even worse. The proration is expected to be 8% in 2007-08 and 71% in 2008-09. The situation will worsen going forward if future appropriations are not adjusted to fully consider rising costs. We fear that shorting the appropriation for special education will become a way to balance the state budget when the state revenues shortfalls occur. This is something that has happened in the past. Special education aid is the second largest aid program for Minnesota school districts, and it's critically important that it be fully funded so districts can count on this revenue when they develop their budgets. The inadequate funding of special education in Mankato or of the public schools requests a $33 million deficit, and for ELL, English Language Learning Services, a $300,000 cost. This is for the districts to support these costs with general education resources. Increased funding for special education and ELL programs would help to alleviate the current drain on regular education resources. Now, not surprisingly, I have typical proposals that suggest we give us more money, and then you also, number two, give us some more money, and number three, you give us some more money. Recognizing that isn't necessarily always the answer, let's go to number four. If the state is only going to fund 89% of the 68%, for example, for salaries, let's be honest with the school districts and the citizens, and let them know the state is funding 60%, not 68%. Let's do the same for contracts that we have. It's 46% instead of 52%. And equipment and supplies, it's 42%, it's not 47%. Let's also take a look at supporting the state's infrastructure. Instead of having an EDRS system, a UFAR system, a MAR system, three different systems that everybody has to work with, three systems that are archaic, three systems that don't talk to each other, how about a single system that communicates? A system that would lead to lower district costs just in the base interfaces or dealing with data processing. Additionally, we want to suggest that work with PS Minnesota provides some very strong guidance in terms of funding. Finally, new special education mandates, and in some cases, state rules that exceed federal law contribute to additional costs. Obviously, we do not want to follow the federal path regarding services for students with disabilities beginning at the age of 3 versus birth when we have strong research supporting early intervention. However, it appears that the State Department of Education ignored the legislative mandate that a committee of stakeholders review the new IDEA regulations and proposed Minnesota rules prior to implementation. Instead, the Department went ahead with rulemaking. As I prepare to insert our special education staff in the new rules, the reality is there's an increase in the paperwork that will result, and this will result in a reduction in the size of the caseload that people can manage, and this will result in a need for additional staffing. At the time, the number of qualified candidates is very limited, and our funding is a struggle. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Dave Johnson and Pete Nelson. Good morning.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you this evening, and thank you for listening. In addition to John Chamberlain, and also two other board members from the LaSalle Anderson School District, our chairperson, Henry Endres, and Bob Evans. Henry was just selected as an all-state school board member by the MSBA, so we're looking forward to the recognition luncheon here in a few days. I don't have a lot of prepared remarks. I signed up kind of on a spur of the moment because the most overriding thing that's concerning me right now is passing our operating levy next fall. It's not easy to pass an operating levy at any time, at least in our school district. And it's not going to be easy during a presidential election when everybody turns out to the polls and they may know something about the president, but they may not have read all the literature or attended the meetings and know anything about why we need to pass an operating levy. And $450 is approximately what we're going to be looking at. And I'm worried about if it doesn't pass, even though we work pretty hard and we plan and we're doing that, we've got that on the top of our list of things to be concerned about. If it doesn't pass, where are we going to cut $450,000? Now that's not directly your problem, but that's kind of what districts face. And it seems to be the operating levy, I know our equalization has gone down from like 58%, now I think it's down to 38%. It gradually has gotten shifted, less aid and more levy. It seems like we're creating a lot of, we're increasing the gap between the districts that have the programs, the enrollments, the money to pay the teachers, and those that don't have a difficult time passing operating levies. And you said the first thing they put on their list is extracurricular, co-curricular programs, which are performance-based, goal-oriented, appeal to, don't differentiate between race or gender or anything else, and just start looking at cutting those things. And then people start open enrolling or threatening to open enroll to other districts that have a program that you're looking at cutting or bring your budget line. It's a ridiculous activity for boards to go through, I think. And it's resulted because the state has backed off on its funding for schools. And I'd like you to take a really serious look at that. The equity and equalization aid that Dr. Olson mentioned earlier, very, very difficult, stressful time leading up to it. And I can imagine what those 32 or 33 districts that didn't pass theirs are doing. It's just not fair. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll turn to Pete Nelson and Superintendent Remy, you're on deck.
Thank you. I'll read some prepared remarks this evening. My name is Pete Nelson. I'm from St. Peter, Minnesota. Thank you for allowing me these few minutes to comment in a testimonial fashion this evening. I come here as an amateur. I'm not a professional educator. I've served the past 2 years on the St. Peter School Board as president. Please excuse my elementary, sometimes naive, understanding of the intricacies of the educational system in Minnesota. My last direct involvement with formal education, up until running for the school board, was over 20 years ago as a student. By trade, I'm a financial advisor involved in retirement planning and investments for individuals. Hardly the kind of big finance decisions you all deal with at the state level, but significant nonetheless to each and one and every one of my clients. I've been a lifelong resident of Minnesota and was educated in both public and private school settings. My father was a physician, my mother was a minister, so education is a way of life in my family. When I received notification of the state K-12 hearing, my first thought on what to say that I turned towards a specific actionable proposal that I can present to you. Many of the specific proposals you've heard tonight are the kinds of concrete examples legislators need to take back to St. Paul. I wanted something that I could give back to you to take to St. Paul, much like the presidential debates are focusing on change right now that we see. According to Barack Obama, this country spends $275 billion a day in the war in Iraq. I know as a legislature, you're faced with billion-dollar proposals for sports stadiums. I'm not opposed to either of those issues, but those issues are juxtaposed against our priority for education as well. I recognize the challenge that you all have. Imagine the impact of another $275 million or $1 billion if it were invested in our children. Now imagine the impact if we
we could solve those problems without the registry. That would be your challenge. That is our challenge as school board members too. Do we spend more money? Do we allocate the resources that we have? Or do we hold the line? When I ran for office 2 years ago, I ran with the idea that serving as a school board member would allow me to make a difference. I still believe I can, but that idealism is now more pragmatic 2 years later. My perspective today is as an adult who provides education, not as a student who consumes education. The additional perspective I have is two young children going through this eight-year public school system as I watch them grow. It is my hope that my understanding will grow over time and with experience. It's a dangerous business to generalize. I know when you paint broad brush strokes, there are always the issues of contrary influences. However, it is important for me to share three observations that I observed in my first 2 years on the school board. Number one, the business of education will never have enough money. Corollary to this is the money that is already allocated does not have the corresponding accountability measures in place to demonstrate the value and success. In the corporate world, this would be something akin to return on investment or profit. Even my own time spent on school board is consumed with much discussion about the money and very little discussion about the kids or the content of our education. Number two, organizational structure and cultural relationships within the field of education are confrontational and combative by nature. Even the language within this profession reveals this kind of tension. Rarely does one hear words like leap, collaboration, excellence, optimism. Instead, it's far more common to hear words like convey, mean, left behind, frustration, special interest. Number three, people in the field of education really do start out caring about kids. They have a passion for what they do. However, over time, even the most upbeat and motivated professionals feel the drag of bureaucratic decision-making, the transfer of social change. Challenges into the school system and the stagnation of career paths. All these factors and more are combined to demotivate and turn what should be a mind-opening, positive profession into a mind-numbing exercise in negativity. It is my belief that our democracy must have all of its citizenry educated and prepared to debate all issues in a civil and thoughtful manner. It is our duty and our privilege, as you all experience being representatives of the state of Minnesota. Somehow on a regular basis, this government transfers its power, like Blackwood, although with great acrimony at times, what we do in a civil and non-violent way. And if you thought that I represent some kind of a positive plan or story for you tonight, but many of the presenters have already addressed these specific actions. My message to you is this. Tell every leader at every level of government who will listen to you, no matter what party, that the time has come for the debate to stop. The time is for action. It's no longer just about the money or the buildings, liberalism versus conservatism, employee unions, or party politics. It's about our priorities, the people of this state, and the attitude with which we are going to approach those problems. The solutions are not necessarily found in spending more money. The solutions lie within the people. Please go back to St. Paul and pass laws that solve the problems and give people hope. I have faith your collective interests, your collective intellect, can come up with those creative solutions. Let me close with this story. 30 years ago, a librarian walked into this high school's library. She had a conversation with a 16-year-old student who had not done very well as his PSAT exam. She handed him a book, instructed him to read it, and informed him in 1 week he was to report back for a half-hour forum discussion that morning. With that completed, she handed him another book, and that student did it again, week after week, until the end of the year. The next year, that same student passed the ACT exam with flying colors. The librarian didn't need to take this action. It wasn't part of her contract. She didn't have to do it. She could have punched the clock, gone home, called it a day. Instead, she chose to care and get involved in the life of that student. I will forever thank that librarian. Imagine if our policies and laws encouraged and rewarded thousands of people in the field of education who care just like that librarian. Thank you to each one of you legislators for what you do. Dr. Morrow, thank you very much for bringing your colleagues before us this evening to hear what we have to say.
Thank you. Superintendent Harvey, the superintendent's coming down. I would just like to note that there is a task force that's been meeting under Representative Bradley's direction on the House side, Education Finance Task Force. I think we've addressed some of the points that Board Member Nelson has mentioned, and you've heard reference to PS Minnesota several times this evening. I'd just like to point out psminnesota.org is the website that one can find this proposal for how to pursue education funding reform to improve education finance. We can talk about some of these issues. Now again, that's www.psminnesota.org, which is more operated as a starting point for us in our discussions. Thank you.
Good evening, and I want to say thank you to the committee for being here this evening and listening to the presentations that have been made. I want to compliment those who have made presentations before. I guess I could just say ditto to the previous speaker. I couldn't have said it better myself, and I really applaud what he had as a message. I'm Superintendent DeNewall. I go over here tonight because it just happened I didn't have another meeting to attend. I wasn't planning to address you this evening, but some of my colleagues convinced me that I should say a few words, so I consented to do so. So I have hurriedly put together some notes. I don't have a handout, and these are just kind of spur-of-the-moment kinds of thoughts, so please keep that in mind. I want to first begin by saying thank you. Thank you for what you have done as a legislature in the past for education. We always want more. We're always asking for something, but we need to also say thank you for the blessings that we have had in the past. I want to thank you for being here tonight. I think that demonstrates to us that are in the field of education that you care about what's happening and that you care about the future of Minnesota schools. I also want to say that I recognize the difficult task that you have ahead of you as the legislature reconvenes now in February. I'm really here to talk to you about the need for adequate and stable funding. You will hear concerns from many people as the legislative session begins. There are lots of needs that our state has, be they for the students that we serve or for the elderly population, for our roads and transportation, and all kinds of other needs that you will hear about as the days unfold. We cannot expect that we're going to get significant help for education funding from the federal government. That has not been a significant part of education funding in the past. It's not going to be in the future. I also do not think that we can expect funding for education in Minnesota to be a local decision. I think it to do so drives us away from the uniformity of educational services across the state. Let me tell you just a little bit about the New Ulm story. I'm in my 10th year as superintendent in New Ulm. That's the community of charm and tradition, in case you didn't know that. Just that's where our chambers at. We have a district population over that 10 years, it's actually been pretty stable. If you look at our community ed funding factor, it's about 19,000 people that live in our school district. When I came to New Ulm 10 years ago, we had almost 2,900 students in our public system. We had a little over 2,000 right now, about 2,050. Our population has, student population has declined between 850 and 900 students in the last 10 years. That's very significant. You couple that with the same, at the same time with a frozen foundation formula, and we've had to make significant cuts. We, in fact, we made $4 million worth of cuts in the past 5 years. That's very significant, and we've had much impact in our classrooms because of that. In 2006, we ran a levy referendum during a statewide election. It failed. It failed miserably. I was extremely disappointed. Our board was extremely disappointed. Our staff and students were disappointed. We ran another referendum in 2007. That one passed by 900 votes, one of the higher margins of victory that we've had in a while in New Orleans. What it does, though, it just kind of stops the bleeding. It doesn't fix the problem. And we have high class sizes this year. We have right now, and our school system is not what you'd consider to be a large school system. In our 7th through 12th school, we have about 1,000 students. In that 7th through 12th building, we have 99 sections of over 30 students in them, as high as 37 in some sections. Absolutely not an acceptable educational setting. With that, we've lost some elective course offerings at the secondary level. I ask you, and I plead with you, please, you cannot rely on local tax situations to fund Minnesota schools. Minnesota law clearly states that education is a state function and the implementation of it is a local function. Minnesota schools need and deserve adequate and stable funding. I'm a trained educator. I'm not a professional fundraiser. I don't want to be a fundraiser. I'm passionate about education and I want to cultivate the passion that I have for education. I want you as legislators to do whatever you can to get me back in the right direction doing the things that I was trained to do and that I like to do. Thank you for your time.
We invite Keith Leonard to come down and Nancy Payne, you're next.
Welcome to the committee. Thank you, Mr. Morrow. As you said, I got back on the school board with a little bit of help from Mr. Morrow. And I farmed west of St. Peter, 6.5 miles, and I don't know if this would have been a state cap. I know I'm going to be farming there. I just want to say how strong I believe in the local boards. And I urge you, as you pass your laws and make your decisions, that you remember how, as some of you were board members, and how fine a job local school boards do. You know that. And I really believe in that system, the local school boards and all that they do and the decisions that local boards make for their towns, for their kids, and their schools. And I really appreciate all the work you do. And I know every one of you up there is strong advocates for education. Obviously, being here says that. You take the time yourself to be here with us. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And again, welcome to St. Peter. I'm Nancy Penn. I'm with Community and Family Education. I've been with Early Childhood Family Education since I came to St. Peter 21 years ago. So I've seen ECFE grow and I saw the school readiness program come to town as well. One of the things that I have not seen grow is really the state focus on really trying to make a difference to all our families in St. Peter. You heard some reports tonight about how early childhood is so important to the readiness of children when they start kindergarten. And what we have found here in St. Peter is that one of the things that needs to be done is intentional outreach. And with the support of Dr. Wilson and our school board, we have worked with the city and the county and we have a community liaison. Those community liaisons have even gone house to house to try and find families, find out what they need to better connect with our schools and their communities, but also what they need just to make a difference. And with the current funding, what we find is that it does not encourage or financially support the best practices for strong outreach programming and services. So while we have done and found extra money for community liaisons, there are still too many things that are on tap for our families. With programs and staffing for recruitment, referrals, and services, we find that we have to pay for home visits and also many times follow-up home visits. What we're finding out with our home visits is the families that do not have children in the K-12 system that really need the most assistance. We find that thankfully we have excellent social workers in our school and our principals and our staff follow up. But prior to that, our families are not connected with the K-12 system and they do not get the support without special outreach. We find that there are links in communication for referrals. We work with a number of community agencies and county agencies, but there are not guidelines for that funding. And much of the time we find that the funding itself is very categorical and more difficult to work with. We find that transportation has been an issue since ECSE and school readiness have begun. Legislators tell us we can transfer families, but we have no additional funding. This year, our school readiness transportation alone will be nearly $10,000, nearly half our budget as state aid. We have difficulty trying to pull together and maintain a family literacy project, which would benefit the children as well as the parents. We know that with adult basic education formulas, they have an annual focus. On the year that they focus with extra funding for family literacy, we have a great family literacy program. But their focus changes each year, and so they move on to a new endeavor. We also find that child care assistance is difficult with the family lit program as well. We can't always have our ELL families involved because they may not qualify for the child care assistance. Bilingual support for our ECSE and school readiness programs is very limited. Right now, we can offer, because of financial reasons, for one ECSE class and one school readiness class. And especially with the parent involvement, it's critical that we have interpreters. We need additional staff and additional classrooms as our school readiness program increases. We are serving nearly 40% more students this year than even last year. And of those 40% new students, over 80% are on free and reduced lunch. We need a way to better serve these families and to bring their parents into the fold of the school district as well. What we are asking is that you develop funding formulas which recognize the fiscal responsibility for effective outreach, referral, and services that we try and offer through the school district. Thank you.
Thank you. That completes the list of testifiers who signed up when we began this evening. We have an opportunity here to open up. Please, Ms. Jim, could you, if you'd like to step forward, and anyone else would like to as well, please feel free to come forward. And I would remind everyone to state your name for the record.
My name is John Chamberlain. I'm a rookie member of the Lucerne Henderson School District and live in rural Lucerne, about 4 miles from here across the river. I wasn't going to speak tonight, but I became moved to do so. Mark Twain once said, gave some advice to somebody that it's better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to open one's mouth and leave no doubt. My colleagues on the school board have heard me quote that before and have heard me demonstrate it as well. I'm a rookie after only 4 years on this school board. Yet it is my distinct impression, and I'm speaking for myself, it is my distinct impression that it is a colossal inefficiency and an aggravation of time taken from student instruction and time taken away from school administration to negotiate contracts with faculties in every single district in the state. Now, every time I brought this topic up with anybody who was twice as smart as I am, the response is, you are really a simpleton to think about talking like this, but I'm going to keep talking. It is a colossal error, in my opinion, because of the potential to erode the teamwork and the development of collegiality, which we work on successfully, I might say, in our district. But the collegiality of the teamwork among our faculty is all at risk when we sit down and enter into the old-time industrial union management notion of negotiating contracts. I was quoted in last week's Lucerne News Herald It was my opinion that teachers as a profession are underpaid because they are undervalued by society. That's an embarrassment to me, who came from a family that loved education and respected it, and who now represents education on the school board. It's my opinion that as a profession, teachers are underpaid and undervalued. Now, maybe I'm naive and childlike, but can't teacher salaries and working conditions be materially improved in some other fashion? As the little boy in the folk tale, The Emperor's New Clothes, said, as the naked emperor walked past, he has nothing on him. Who will take this on?
Thank you. Would anyone else like to come forward? We still have a few moments left. Because if no one does, please just grab the stage. Otherwise, it's us and you don't. Mr. Peterson.
Well, good evening. My name is Paul Peterson, and I serve as the building principal here at St. Peter High School. And I just had a couple comments to share, and many of the fine comments tonight really are a reflection of my own views. But first and foremost, I want to thank you for coming to St. Peter. I really appreciate the dedication that all of you have shown. Representative Romora, Representative Gadman, I know as a teacher, and the idea that someone can put in a day like that and then hop in a car and head to St. Peter, that's great, so we really appreciate that. Certainly, as a building principal, oftentimes principals and leaders of the building level are really right in the middle of all of it. In hearing the concerns from parents and from students and from teachers and administrators, and I really want to make sure that we have an opportunity to really echo what we've heard from some of our superintendents and some of our other leaders here tonight, and that is how difficult it is to be on that cutting edge of education and get excited about what's out there with the exploding of research about how kids learn and how to design schools and to think imaginatively about programming. Often those things are not cost-free, and difficult decisions have to be made. And so we appreciate what you do at your level to make sure that really our focus is on education. And as superintendents ask principals, well, can you make it work? Can you make it work? Well, certainly you can. But at the same time, there are costs that come with all of those decisions. And to the extent that you are able to bring back to St. Paul what we've heard tonight about reliable funding so we can really keep our eye on what's best in the best interest of our students rather than how do we keep tearing down but keeping the quality up. If there isn't a person in this room that isn't for high quality and high accountability, provided that we've got the resources at our disposal to help do what we can do at the local level. So thank you again for coming to St. Peter.
Any final takes? If not, I'm going to turn to Representative Boehner. Being my seatmate next to me and leading me through my first session, if you have any final thoughts that I want to share.
One of the things I always like to challenge groups about when you take public testimony is it is really important for us to hear what you have to say, but it's equally important for you to go back into your community and talk to your neighbors, your colleagues, your friends, about the same issues you're testifying to us about, because we need community consensus and public will to take on the issue about even what resources we are willing to invest as a state. And the more that discussion is owned by the public and not just by the professionals, the more successful we will be, because it is about democracy and it is about participation. So that's my challenge to you. We will continue to dialogue and listen, but don't just talk this way. Go back into the community and talk across your communities.
Great, thank you. Also, turn for some final thoughts for Representative Price.
Thank you, and you're lucky to have Representative Morrill as your representative from this area, and Representative Brainerd as some of your representatives. They're both first-termers, and they're incredibly talented, and Representative Morrill is my vice chair of the committee. He vice-chairs this committee and meets with the planning and the agenda, so you've got frontline people who can take your your input and make use of it at the Capitol. And we've had a few of these hearings this year and last year and been around. We started out with a hearing in North Minneapolis about a year ago, and we've been at various areas of the state, further north and further south. And wherever we go, we hear a lot of commonalities like we've heard tonight. And of course, people want stable and adequate funding. There's also the common theme that we've heard of not to rely on those local levies. Even districts that are property wealthy can't always pass their levies. And because the people just can't afford to pay any more property taxes. So really, it's just no way to run a school system to not have the state leadership and the state funding. And we're definitely the team that's for that, fighting for that with our colleagues amongst all the other worthy causes that we have at the legislature. So thank you for reinforcing us on that. I just want to comment on just one issue that was raised here because it's one we haven't heard from any other audiences, and that's the one that John Chamberlain mentioned towards the end on the negotiation. You know, when I was first in the legislature quite a long while ago serving with Representative Doran, we remember this issue from the early 90s when some groups, and I think Education Minnesota was the leader, were pushing for regional bargaining, and then we had the Teacher Federation that was pushing for state bargaining. They hadn't gotten together yet and had a common voice, but they kind of get each other in by arguing one for regional bargaining and one for statewide bargaining. But we haven't heard about that issue for a long, long time. But that was, you know, I was a co-author of the regional bargaining, and it made a lot of sense to me because there is a lot of time and acrimony that's spent with every single district having to do all these bargaining issues. So I don't know if anybody wants to come forward with that or your own local legislators want to bring it up, but I was interested 15 years ago and I still think it's a worthy issue as well. So thank you very much for your valuable input, and I hope you'll keep giving us input throughout the session because we do, we don't hear from, we've never been here from too many education advocates.
Well, thank you, and I would like to thank Liz Vanderbilt in the back and Shannon Patrick for helping to organize this evening. Again, thank you to Tim Strong and Craig Crow, and I'd like to thank both Greg and Summer for joining us this evening as well. It was mentioned early on that St. Peter at one point was going to be the state capital. We don't resurrect that argument, but I do know in a former vice, so to speak, working with the city, working with the college here and the like, we did come up with an idea of at least naming ourselves the education capital of Minnesota. And I hope you, my colleagues here tonight will see why I might have some ground for that argument. But failing that, I would like to give each member and everyone else who drove down. This is a cup developed by our Chamber of Commerce for the Winter Fest that's coming up, and especially given the temperature tonight. Thank you all very much for making the drive. If you can see why I'm so proud to be from this area, and this meeting is adjourned.